It's rock and roll. Okay, hello guys. We're here again today. We're going to just have a little chat today with Matt and Hadassah, who are both survivors of fundamentalist IB Church, which is really Independent Baptist Church. They're both survivors in different ways. We had a good chat to Hadassah about her sort of journey the other day, being brought up in New Guinea in a very fundy family. So welcome, guys. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Let's just have a bit of a chat with yourself, Matt, and just see... you want to just give us a bit of background? So you and Hadassah have been... Oh, we were just talking down the beach there. You guys are like cousins, right?
Yeah, yep. We met back in Papua New Guinea.
Oh, you met in Papua New Guinea?
Yeah. Just after I was born, I went to Papua New Guinea with my parents.
Yep.
They were working at CRMF, which was the sort of... radio output for all the villages.
Ah, okay.
And through that, that's how both my parents and her parents then met.
Right, right. So they were sort of on the common goal of mission work up
exactly.
there to the tribes people in the Highland area.
Yeah,
was that
so
the same thing?
Dad was providing a lot of sort of radio support and installation fixing,
okay.
creating contact and stuff like that.
Right, so he was a bit of a tech sort of guy.
Yeah, yep. So he was electronics technician by trade. So.
Yep.
Providing that support was then how we then met, obviously, Dave and Julie.
Yep.
They become really good friends. I'd only just been born. Hadassah wasn't born at that point.
I wasn't even thought of.
So that was back in 94, I think it was.
Okay.
And then over the years, they're obviously quite close as families. Each time they came back to Australia, we would then meet up with them. They'd often stay at our place for a few weeks.
Okay. Oh, so they were just short-term mission, your parents up there.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
we were only up there for about I think it was about a year.
Yep. Just to kind of get things going.
They were planning to go back, but situation changed. The Lord
yep.
redirected. And,
yep.
We ended up living in Mount Beauty. And that's where the Crows would then obviously come down. They'd stay with us or in the same town.
Okay. Yeah.
And we'd have quite a bit to do. Dad would often arrange mission trips or things like that to go up and help them in PNG. So
right.
he went back a few times.
So he became quite a supporter of the
Very
family,
much
the Crow
so.
Family.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Okay.
So there was quite a close connection there. And then in, would have been when I was 12, I think it was, our family headed up and actually visited the Crows out at Cargoo.
Yep.
So again, that was sort of just more connections and more friendship building. So it was, yeah, very much like a family type situation. It was, they were uncle and aunties and we were all cousins as kids.
Yeah, yeah. And got pretty close, pretty tight.
Pretty close.
Yeah,
had our typical
close.
Sort of sibling drama.
Sibling rivalry happening.
Yeah, so it was very
Sam
much like a family.
Sam and Matt did not like each other.
No, it was always
oh,
who
okay.
was the better guy because
yep.
we were the only two guys and the rest were
all these
girls.
Women.
Yep.
So it was, I think, fighting for who ruled the roost.
Yep.
Yeah, there's that testosterone sort of, who's the rooster here
yep.
sort of
yep.
thing.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
And you're a similar age to Sam.
Yeah, so
he's
just
brother.
A little bit older.
Yep.
Than me, but yeah, pretty close in age.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just it created a bit of a. I don't know. It was good because it was such a family group, even though it was two separate families. We still, in a sense, ran under the same structures, the same ideals, and everything. Everyone was bouncing off each other. So,
yes, yes.
Yeah, compared to where you might visit someone normally, and it's like, you know, well, this is. Our family system, that's your family system. It was very much connected and
yeah.
Very similar.
And that's quite a common thing within sort of a lot of sort of fundamentalist groups, isn't it? They have a very common goal. There's a lot of similar beliefs and, like you mentioned, structures,
yep.
which each family sort of buys
yes.
into, I suppose.
Yep.
Would you say that's kind of what
it's,
it is when you come in?
It's almost like a card game where you're trading off cards with each other. It's,
yep.
oh, so you do this. Okay, well, we'll take that card too and add that to our deck. And,
yes, yes.
Oh, get rid of those ones because you don't do that. So therefore, and
yep.
yeah, just sort of very...
Doesn't fit.
In a sense, streamlines
yes.
the culture, if at all, of how everything runs.
Yeah.
That's an interesting word, isn't it? So did you notice that too, Hadassah, then the culture? It's got its own little culture within it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And especially like if there was pastors or my... parents as missionaries, they're like sort of looked up to, so whatever
yes.
they were doing, like everyone
yep.
else would sort of fall in line under them too.
Yep.
So the culture flow, much like any culture, that culture flows down, doesn't it? We pick
yeah.
up, like you can watch it across the world in different areas, we sort of flow it's like a bit of a river, isn't it? Like yeah. everyone's wearing this, watching that, buying iPhones, Samsung, whatever it is.
Yeah.
People are in and they follow that culture trend.
And it's
exactly
and
what
I
it's
think
like.
It's interesting because you have your, in a sense, your trendsetters, which are oftentimes your missionaries or
right.
My dad was, in a sense, looked, in a sense, as a trendsetter.
Okay.
Yeah. People would sort of look to him and
he's
what does Brendan Davies think? Oh, he thinks this, therefore, yeah. okay. That's something that then held a lot of merit and a lot of weight.
Did it? Okay.
Which then I think, which I think Hadass would understand as well, it then flows through onto the kids because the pressure is then you have to live up to the expectation of who the parents are. And if they're
very
the trendsetter, so,
yeah.
to speak,
yes.
you're the next one in line to continue that trend and you have to then be better than them.
So better.
That expectation grows. As it flows down, which puts a lot of pressure and a lot of, I don't know, what would you say? Just it's, it just sort of
it's
builds.
Yeah,
yeah it's,
and it kind of like make it defines who you are.
Because you talked about that the other
yes,
day, didn't you?
For me, I lost myself in that, so I didn't actually know who I was because I was focused on, yeah, following the trend of my parents.
Yeah,
so
you're more
you
so.
Think,
daughter of, or in
yeah.
this case, your son
he
of.
He was Matt, like he was Matt Davies, son of Brendan, and I was like David Crowe's daughter.
Literally, for both of us, there was probably 5-6 years ago when I was still within that circle. I could go to nearly any church in Australia that was off that ilk.
Yep.
Rock up, and people would say, "Oh, hi, where are you from?" You go, "Ah, oh, from Albury." "Oh, yeah, nice." Blah, blah, blah. "What are you doing here?" "Oh, just here for a holiday or visiting so-and-so." "Oh, yeah, yeah." So sort of that sort of ask a question like, "What? Where do you connect into this?"
Yeah.
And you just simply go, "I'm Brendan Davies' son." And they go,
"The lights
you want to come over for lunch? Like, so good to meet you. You know, I met your dad here and this and that." And
so all of a sudden there's an open door almost if you're part of that.
It was almost like that free ticket to get
free ticket, the golden ticket.
Acceptance into anywhere because of your parents.
Yeah, yeah. So there's good and bad and all these things. So there's sort of a bit of a flow happens if you're in at the time. You're in everywhere by the sound of it, even if you're not known personally. What does that come like a sort of a recommendation in a sense?
Pretty much, yeah. It's like the little Instagram verified blue tick. It's like, you know, this one is a guaranteed celebrity.
Yeah,
they're worth following.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like a guaranteed that because Matt was Brendan's son, he would be a good Christian that wouldn't sin, do these certain
would
things.
Would have good certain
morals.
Standards on a certain... Because, you know, in the group you'll have your... what some like your conservative ones, which were, you know, the old fashioned ones viewed from one side, but then on viewing the other way, it was you had your sort of modern ones that were very charismatic
liberal.
And out there and liberal. So it became two sides where one thought one was terrible because they were too there, and the other one was terrible because they were too close to things.
Right.
Hello, Frank.
I didn't think of that.
So it's sort of once you get those sort of two sides in there, being known as, you know, Brendan Davies or Dave Crowe's child,
yes,
that would then relegate you to a certain part of which side, is it the left or the right?
That's right. I can imagine.
Yeah, so it was sort of... I don't know, it became one of those things that you learn to sort of just go with and adapt to. It was just the norm. You rock up and they're like, "Oh yeah, you're Brendan Davies' son," and you become a bit of a celebrity.
That's interesting,
and you'd take to it and you'd walk in and give that little hair flick, you know. "Yes, I'm Brendan Davies' son."
Yeah, that's
you know,
right. Yeah.
Puff your
I've
chest
got my
out
golden ticket here.
Yeah,
I can
exactly.
do anything. I can come in. You can probably preach or teach or do anything.
Yeah,
it
was very
fashionable
much,
in it.
Yeah, there was times where I'd go to a church and they'd be like, "Oh, Brendan Davies' son, can we get you to like come up and, you know, tell us about this or that during the service? Or can we get you to, you know, close in prayer or open in prayer or,
course,
you know, something?"
Yes.
And it was like, whereas if I rocked up and I was just a random person that they didn't know who I was,
yep,
they wouldn't even think of asking me.
Right, right. So this expectation that flowed down from parent to child had sort of two sides to it then. One was the pressure you guys felt to yep. live up to some other's expectations.
At the start, it was sort of that celebrity vibe, and you'd ride that wave, and it was like, this is amazing.
Okay.
And then the it's more good. You'd ride it, the more it became oppressive, and you felt like you was tied down, and the pressure then becomes so much, because if you don't fit that mold, people then turn on you, or they criticize you or judge you for judgment. That.
Ah, because now you're not quite getting to that celebrity status. Like simple things. Oh, that's interesting, because that's not unlike the world system of celebrity.
Yeah,
there's an expectation of how you have to live, and if you don't live that way, then you lose...
Haters, of the, yeah, they call them, or whatever they call them nowadays.
Like, as I was 18, you get your license. Typical guy, you've got all your guy mates, they've all just got their license, they're out there, you know, get to the traffic lights, spin your wheels as you go off, or drive fast around a corner, it's, oh yeah, check this out. I'd get there and I'd be like, you know, everyone's doing it, that's what you do.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, like, we do a lot of four-wheel driving stuff, so you jump in the driver's seat and you go, well, they've just done a full burnout, I'm just going to, like, squeak the tyres, and everyone would judge you for it. And they'd be like, oh, you're such a crazy driver, like, why are you doing that?
Ah,
and I never understood why. I'm like, so there's six of you doing it, and it's fine, but I do it, and you all look down at me, what's the difference?
Yeah.
And it took me years to realise that it was this celebrity status, because they were nobody. Yes. It was fine for them to do it.
Right. Okay.
But because in their mind's eye, I was Brendan Davies' son.
Yep.
You know, I had this, my father was in this position where he was respected and viewed in a good light.
Mm-hmm.
There was that expectation that I would follow with that. So therefore, I shouldn't be doing that. Even though they would do it and it's okay, I shouldn't be doing it.
Yes. Different standards. Different. Yeah. The exactly balance was out. Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. So that's a lot of pressure then, that, and you started to really notice that then as you got older.
Very much so. And it was something that built over time, and you slowly, it was then, as Hadassah said, you know, you struggled to then know who you were, because it was all about being who your parents were, or who people expected you to be because of what they saw of your parents. You know, I love my parents, and all parents are like this. They have their flaws and their good aspects, but what people saw and thought of my family, they would make comments, and you'd have to sit there and smile and go, oh, yes, you know, such a loving family.
Okay.
We care for each other. We do so much. But no, our family was like any other family. We had our issues, we had our arguments, there were fights, there were disagreements, you know, I don't think this and I don't think that. But from the outside, people would look and they'd go, they're such the model family. They rock up to church, they're all well-dressed, they're well-behaved, they're involved in ministry. We're just like anyone else.
Yeah.
We still have our dramas, we still, you know, fight and bicker. Me and my sister would still, I would stir my sister up and she would cop the brunt of it, you know. Just like any other family.
Oh, I totally get that.
But that expectation was there that you were better than that, that you were that sort of higher level, so to speak.
Exactly.
It's something that pressure then changes who you become, and you become someone that you don't actually know.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting point, isn't it? Because I was wondering then, just as you were saying that, it sort of reminded me of what you hear about people who are in, like, genuine world celebrities. They always say, well, look at the problems they have with drug overdosing and trying to find the right partner and all that. There's a lot of lost, because, like, when you're expected to be someone and you live as that, who are you underneath? So this was a question for you, was it? Who am I?
Very much so, because you view it as... You know, like, to one person, I would be dressed as a country look person because there was that expectation that you needed to look a certain way.
Yeah.
But then I'd have a different family that was just as conservative, but would happily wear, you know, logo T-shirts with Nike, Fox or whatever.
Okay.
And for them, that was the norm. And they'd go, you're a bit of a country bumpkin wearing a check shirt and jeans.
Okay.
But with the other family, it was like, why are you wearing those logoed stuff? That's very worldly.
Oh, I see. Oh, and even to that level. They're
both just as conservative as each other.
Yes.
But
in a different way.
But in a different way. So it was then, you're then chasing your tail trying to be this model figure. but you had to be the model figure the way that they wanted you. So it becomes so easy. I was just changing, literally changing my clothes to suit the situation, who I was for the person, not because I was trying to be a hypocrite or two-faced, but because there was that expectation. Like a celebrity gets there and the media goes, oh, are they dating this person now? Or, oh, we think they should do that. You watch cricket players.
Yeah.
Oh, they're not getting the runs. We think this, we think. And all of a sudden you see their form slump.
Yeah.
Because they read and take on what everyone else thinks rather than going, this is who I am. This is how I bat. That's how I score.
It's a good analogy, isn't it? That's right. That Which is how they got in the team, so to speak.
Exactly.
Because, and in this case, we're talking about the human person forming. And I guess when you're born into that, both of you guys, it's quite difficult to form your particular character, nature, personhood when you are living as a chameleon to some degree, putting on the show, the external.
Yep.
So you guys found it difficult to be, well, you were sort of saying the other day, well, you know, who am I?
Yeah, and amongst all of that, still trying to figure that out.
Which is not unusual for a teenager anyway, but it must be difficult if you're... got two sides, you're now trying to perform as well.
Yep.
It's quite damaging as a young person too, because like you were saying, you have to mould into both sides because they're sort of like the IBs are split and there's the cool ones and the not sort of, you know. And so you're trying to please them, but if you stuff up, like the amount of judgment that comes at you...
from both sides gesturing.
Yeah, it just damages you so much. And when you're young, you want your friends to like love everything that you're doing and be pleased with you. Of course. And then for you, that would have been really hectic because you'd stuff up for that side and then this side would be judging you. And then, and it's like, do my friends actually love me for who I am as Hadassah or as Matt? Or do they just like want me to be this performing chameleon for them all?
And that's pretty big because you need those that love you genuinely. That's what we all want, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's something that, as you were saying there, like you become this position where, are you in the group because you're the celebrity, so to speak, and you're, you know, everyone wants to have a high-profile person in their group because it makes them feel like they're someone. So are you that high-profile person providing that satisfaction to them, or are you just part of that group because we are actually all friends?
And that was open to question then for you.
Yeah, and I had friends where I'd hang out with them and I was hanging out with them because I was Brendan Davies' son, so I was allowed to be part of that group because you can't exclude him because he's Brendan Davies' son. But at the same time, there was other friends that I'd hang out with and it was because I was actually friends with them and it was our relationship that we would hang out.
Yeah, so a different basis there. There's quite a different...
To a different level,
And you can sort of, you like now you would know who those people are now being out of the IBs, who your real friends were, because once you like step out and you take away your high profile as such, whoever's left, they were your real friends. And it's sort of like a pittance of people that's left. And it shows like what people's true hearts in that situation really are.
And that's when I did end up leaving that circle. I went from being, you know, this, for want of a better word, celebrity person where I could rock up anywhere and people knew who I was.
Yes.
You know, they might not have spoken to me. They could go, oh, that's that dude. We know who he is. We've seen him. You know, we go to church meetings, Melbourne or Sydney, and auditorium's got 1,000 people in it. And there wasn't many people that wouldn't know where you're linked to or wouldn't have seen you around at some point.
It's like that degrees of separation thing is very limited, isn't it, in a movement such as that. There's not many degrees of separation at all. Yeah.
You know, there was one in Melbourne that I went to. Myself and another guy sang a duet up the front in front of 600 people. It was one of the smaller services. And it was just, you know, you do that and it was just the expected, you know, oh yeah, cool, he's done that. Everyone knows that's the dude that's saying he's connected here, there.
That's right.
When I then left that circle, I realized I had no one to hang out with.
Okay.
Because outside of that circle, I didn't have friends because you didn't create friends outside of that circle because it wasn't viewed as the dumb thing or anything. So all of a sudden you then left high and dry going, well, I've got no friends. And then, as you said, you've got to sort through and go, well, are any of these people actually my friends, or are they just connections because you're all lumped into that one circle? And you sort of slowly go through and you go, well, out of those 1,000 people that knew me, all of a sudden there's only three or four that actually keep contact with me, or when I message would continue messaging me.
Right. And did you leave? Well, can you share why you actually left? Yeah, what brought you to that point?
Yeah, so that meeting I just mentioned in Melbourne, shortly after that, it was about 3-4 months after that, I ended up moving from where I lived in Albury to go to a Bible college. And I spent 2 years doing that, which again was a big eye-opener, because when you went there, that took away a lot of that celebrity status.
Right.
You're a student there. There's no freebies. You're a nobody. You're there to learn.
Yep. Everyone's kind of on the same level now.
Exactly. So that was a bit of a shock to me, because I was used to rocking up somewhere and everyone going, oh, you're up there.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden there was no special treatment. You're just one of the pack type thing. So that took a bit of adjusting. And then as you were then, you know, learning throughout the different lessons and things like that, there was questions where it was just, oh, this is what's always been taught or what's always been done. And I started questioning and going, well, these deeper things, that's different, that's different. This isn't lining up with that, which then that started to change my focus. And I started to step back a little bit and look at it and go, okay, well, if this is what's being taught and that's what the Bible actually says, there's issues with what's going on here.
Okay, so you started to see a difference between the doctrines and the teaching that you were learning
The methods.
Was this a college within the movement?
It was,
the movement?
It was.
Okay.
And it was sort of, seeing that difference in the culture versus actual biblical Christianity, and going, some of these things are not hard and fast rules. They're choices people make.
I see, yes.
But they're pushing it as, no, this, if you're not doing this, then you're wrong.
Right. And what did wrong mean in this group? What if you were wrong, what did that actually mean as a person?
Well, if you're doing something that was wrong, you then started to view in the light of an outcast. It wasn't it wasn't just a, oh, well, your view's different, that's cool, we keep going. It was like, well, okay, right or wrong. You're wrong. Okay, now we need a change of view because you're wrong. You can't be wrong. You have to be right. You have to be with us.
Okay.
So therefore,
we have
to prove to you that you're wrong. And if you're not willing to accept that, then you are wrong. You know you're wrong. So therefore, we can't have anything to do with you.
And that's that sort of thing where they'd go to that tiny little scripture there in one of those epistles and go, oh, take your brother and approach him and then bring someone else and try and convince you to become changed in your viewpoint to what they've seen.
Yep.
Because, like, as we know, like, and we've talked about this more recently, but the people who read the Bible, there's become over 30,000 denominations worldwide of people that read the same Bible.
Yeah.
So there's obviously quite a few different viewpoints.
Yeah.
But in this case, you had to be convinced of a certain set of tenets, like a certain, you know, ABC, if you like.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And it's something that I'd liken it to football. You have, in the case of AFL or NRL, you've got, you know, 15, 18, however many teams it is now, keeps changing, can't keep track. In all those teams, AFL I know a bit better. You have someone like Richmond, you have Geelong, you have North Melbourne, St Kilda. It's totally separate teams.
Yep.
They all play the same game. They all kick a football. They all score 6 points for a goal. They all get 1 point for a behind. It's the same rules.
Yes.
Nothing changes. The umpire says, that's a foul, that's out on the bounds, like, you know, whatever it might be, the rules are the same. It doesn't change.
Yeah.
But what does change, and what you hear spoken about, is the first on the ladder versus the 18th on the ladder.
Yes.
Why are they down there? Something's not right.
Something's wrong with them.
The one thing I can talk about is the culture.
Right.
The culture of the club is wrong. We need to change the culture. We don't have a winning culture. We've got a party culture.
Had that night this year with the Brisbane Broncos.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
The culture's wrong.
The culture's wrong.
Everyone's freaking out.
And everyone gets there and they go, oh, we've got to change the culture.
Mm.
The game never changes. The game stays the same.
Yep.
It's still about, in NRL, taking that, breaking the line, scoring the try.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. That never changes.
That's the culture essence.
And the club changes.
Yes.
And I think that's where, for a lot of these churches, they miss the point that the culture is the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about the culture, not about scoring the tries, not about yes. breaking the line, not about passing the ball, getting that second set of six. You know, all of a sudden it's about the culture of the club outside of the game that matters.
Right, so that's their major focus.
And that's the focus that's happening. And it was something that...
And they're not getting to the game almost.
Exactly.
In some
they're missing the game because they're so focused on that culture. And I think that's where the issues become, is the culture affects the game. But at the end of the day, if you take away the culture or change the culture, you only win the game one way. You've still got to play the game, regardless of how your culture is. So while you say there might be all these different denominations from reading one book, the book is still the same. The book was written, it hasn't changed. It is what it is. It still says the same thing. But everyone comes and pulls their culture out of that and says the culture is now more important than the book. The culture is more important than, you know, the what the book says about, you know, how we're meant to live or what we're meant to do. They take it that extra step further. And in that situation of being in college, I started to see that difference between playing the game versus actually living that culture and choosing what the culture was. And I think that's when I started to question it a lot more and my view started to change on how it all went. But at the same time, 22 years being in that culture,
That's fairly
good. Where else do you go? That's all you know. You don't know. And the criticism and condemnation passed upon other cultures as being so bad.
From within.
Well, if I leave this culture, I've got nowhere to go because everyone else is bad.
Right. So in that 22 years, that's been the talk. Anyone who's gone out into another culture or just in general, those cultures are considered to be just, there's no blending of the two then.
Exactly.
That's why you don't have any friends or anything like
that.
You're
in one or you're in the other.
There's only one way. That's it. You're either in.
Or you're out. There's no grey.
There's no grey.
No grey.
So the black and white, dualistic type thinking is very, very, the polar opposites, isn't it? So you're in, it sounds like in, you're in all the way, you're in everything.
Yeah.
Or once you start to step out,
you're kicked out.
So it must be scary then, like to be on the edge then. What about, what's it like when you're kind of spinning on the edge, considering maybe going out into... I'm not sure about this. The questions are there.
Honestly, sitting on that edge point, it's like a kid being on one of those merry-go-rounds.
That's what I was picturing.
And the feet have slipped out. You're holding on with your hands, going, I can't let go, because if I let go, I'm going to swing out and I'm going to hit all these danger death traps.
Yeah, it's going to be
not
bad.
Not realising that because you're looking in at the merry-go-round, you can't see what's behind you. What's behind you is an extension of the merry-go-round. And someone standing there ready to catch you. And when you let go, they place you down. It's an inch between you and safety.
Yeah.
You're still spinning the same way. Yep. You're still on the, inverted commas, same ride.
Yes.
But you're lost in this thought that if I let go with my hands, I'm into the oblivion of nothing.
And so you're focused on your hands and the
grip that
you have.
And you're focused on that rather than seeing the bigger picture.
Because you've been told all your life that it's very scary to let go. You let go of the roundabout, you're going to swing off into... Into what? Is it sort of involve hell almost to some degree, like damnation, or is it not
anywhere,
that big?
They will take it anywhere from, you know, you then are a backslidden Christian and you don't have the blessing of God to you'll be under the full judgment of God and you won't have his protection.
That sounds
you
pretty
know,
heavy.
Things like Dasanosis, you know, you're going to, if you do this, you'll walk across the street and a car will hit you because God's not protecting you anymore.
Right. Oh, that's right, because I'm thinking back and just for... those who are listening, we actually started on in this group ourselves probably 30-odd years ago, so we had some taste of this, but only for a short time. But I remember there was this thing about the umbrella of protection or something, isn't that right? And you're under there, and if you sin or something comes up and you backslide or whatever the terminology, you're standing out, now you're prone to hailstones or whatever's coming down. And that's a very real feeling, I imagine, then, from inside. If you're stuck thinking... not sure, I'm uncertain now, because you're starting to seek for more or ask questions.
And they scare you as well, because like they say, that because we were brought up in it, we know better. So because Matt and I knew better, and we know the truth, which is not so much the truth anymore, but at the time it was the truth. So we know the truth, we know what's right and wrong, and yet we are still choosing to step out. Okay. There's more judgment for us than there is for someone that has no idea. Do you know what
Which
I mean?
Is interesting because they often view and they say sin is sin. There's no degrees of judgment.
Yeah.
It's whether it's a white lie or it's a murder, like sin is sin, you're judged, it's all, you know, it's like equal. But at the same time, for us, because we've grown up in it and we know better, there's a greater degree of judgment for us than if it was for a random Joe Blow from the back country of Africa that's never heard the gospel before. Oh, their judgment's going to be lesser than mine because I knew better. And I go,
well,
how
you.
Does that work? Like that's, but it becomes such a scary thing.
It's terrifying. You know?
So it is. So there's a lot of fear then in this movement, isn't there?
Yeah.
I remember experiencing it myself, a lot of anxiety and stuff. But
yep.
So the fear is real, but it's how do you overcome fear then in this system by what trying harder or what's the remedy for fear?
There's... To be honest, there's no easy way out.
No.
Like, I've been there watching Mook come through that whole situation.
Mm.
And when you're in that circle, you don't understand it. When you're out of it, you understand it. And
because now you're seeing
because you
clearer.
Can see it from the other side, in a sense, in reverse.
Mm.
And... It's something that, like, for me, going through those stages of leaving that circle, it's like you've just been, you've been on the bus and the bus has dropped you off at a bus stop and you walk out, you've been asleep, you stretch and look around and go, I'm at my stop, but you're in the desert and it's sand dunes everywhere.
Oh, wow.
And you're like...
That's a good picture.
Where do I go? It's empty,
what's next?
It's vast, it's... I can walk any direction.
Oh, I can feel that one, mate. I'm getting the goosebumps on that one.
Which way do I walk?
It's pretty hectic.
Over one sand dune is a full oasis in a city. Over another one is 100 kilometres of sand dunes. Mm. According to everyone, every which way is 100 sand dunes.
Yeah, no.
So
and every which way is bad. Just don't. You don't want to go there.
No. And you're left there going, why have I stopped here? I need to chase the bus down and get back on the bus.
And this
so
is
the
inclination, the
bus,
I imagine.
You wear yourself out chasing the bus. You jump on, but the bus doesn't stop.
Right.
So you're grabbing on, trying to get inside, but the seats are full. And you're going, there's no, my seat's gone. I can't just sit back in that seat and be comfortable around everyone because everyone shuffled the seats again.
Oh, wow.
So it's like you're starting again because all of a sudden they've viewed you as being outcast. You've then got to... earn the respect to be back in that bus again.
Okay.
So you end up getting cast out of the bus again at the next bus stop. But it's the same situation.
Yeah. Again, where do I go?
And it becomes that battle of being able to understand that, okay, from where I'm sitting at this bus stop, I need to forget about the bus.
Mm. That's the first point of call.
I now need to start, make my decision, and understand that I'm responsible for the decision I make, and I wear the consequences.
Yeah,
which is scary because in the circle, it's so much. You know, you need the advice of those around you. You know, seek godly advice. So you speak to the pastors, you speak to the evangelists, you speak to the older people in the church. To what do you think on this?
Yeah.
And they go, I think you should be doing this. And you go, okay, so you do it. And if it doesn't work out, oh well, that was the advice I was given. So you don't, in a sense, necessarily...
So it's not personal growth. You're not taking ownership. Because that's a very common thing, I think, around a lot of churches is that you're sort of always deferring, aren't you, your decision-making process to greater or higher authorities, in a sense, and asking, oh, is it okay if I marry this person? What about this job? But you don't grow.
No, exactly. There's no, like, opportunity for you to make your own decisions. And they, you know, that Bible verse that's like in a multitude of counselors, there,
that's a big one.
That's a big one in their group.
How often is that we all do?
All the time. And you have to get multiple people's advice because you can't just get one person.
Oh, I see,
you
right.
Need a multitude.
So literally, you have
you
to go and ask three or four people.
Yeah, for safety, to keep you safe and to keep you protected. So there's never an opportunity to make a mistake and figure anything out for yourself. So then when you jump off the bus and you're like in the desert alone and there's no town.
Do you relate to that picture that Matt was sharing?
Yeah, it's a good picture, Matt.
As an example, when I went to college, I did the first year and I went back to do a second year because originally I was doing 1 year and then I went back and did a second.
What was this, the course? It was like biblical knowledge?
Yeah, it was in, you could do 1 year, 2, 3, or 4.
Yeah.
And depending on which year you did would depend on what subjects were getting taught that year.
Yep. And what was the end goal though, to be a pastor or something? Well, why were people there?
Yeah, in growth, again, the
Christian growth,
the pressure of being that celebrity figure. My dad had been a pastor for a short time. He was a preacher.
Right.
Growing up, everyone would see me and the comment was always, you know, oh, the Lord's going to use you. He's got big plans for you, I can tell.
Okay, right.
Which puts the pressure on you.
Yeah.
So the Lord's going to use me. I need to be doing things so I'm ready for the Lord to use me.
Right. So you're preparing.
People would then say to me, oh, you know, you're confident, you're good. Because all my friends didn't want to get up the front to sing a song, but I'd get up there and do it. It didn't bother me.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, you're good in front of people. You know, you're going to be a pastor. You need to be a pastor.
So it had been spoken.
So it was
always,
you know, that thing.
Right.
And I'm not going to lie. Like when I was at college and I was preaching, I felt, you know, as much as you get up and you're shaking and you're nervous and you're going, oh, I'm so like stressed here.
Yeah.
The, not necessarily, it wasn't a personal satisfaction, but it was a joy and happiness you'd get from having shared that word that you've studied out and presented to people and going, this is something good I've found. Let me share my little knowledge and treasure with you. I was like, this is amazing. I love this. So the focus became more, I've got a big passion for young people, kids, but in particular young people, because I can see how much I've struggled going through that period and I want to then be able to help other people with that.
Absolutely.
And it was very much, my focus was like, I'd love to be able to be like a youth pastor or evangelist working with youth.
Yes.
So when I did the first year, that was sort of the, I want to expand my knowledge.
Yep.
And then when I went to go back to do the second year, it was like, I want to increase this more to be able to help me dealing with younger people or things like that.
More specifically.
More knowledge and things like that.
Mm.
And at the end of that first year, and this has been a big rabbit trail, talking about, you know, the seeking counsel from a multitude of people.
Yep.
I then went to a number of people and I said, what's your thoughts about me doing another year?
Yeah.
Your dad had asked that. He said to me, I think it is a really good option. I think you should go there. Hmm. I went. He's a missionary. He's one of the top 10 celebrities, you know.
he says.
Cool. I went to my pastor. He said, I think it's a good thing. I spoke to another. Yes, he was younger. He was only in his early 30s, but I had great respect for him.
Yep.
He was involved in his church, you know, doing a fair bit of stuff. He said, I think it's a good option.
Hmm.
All up, there was probably 10 to 12 different people that were older, more mature, celebrities, you know, whatever that ranking that they had, so to speak.
Yeah.
Their advice, they said, yes, I think this is good. At the time, I then spoke to my stepdad and he said, no, I don't think you should.
Huh?
And this is where this whole multitude of counsel came in.
Hmm.
His view was, I had an uncompleted apprenticeship and the Bible says, finish one thing before you do the next.
Sure.
And he said, you haven't finished your apprenticeship. I think you should finish that, then go back and do more years of college if you want. But I think you should finish that. And I was like, you know, I understood where he was coming from. That was fair enough. But me being 19, 20 years old, this whole idea that counsel of a multitude of people was so much there that I was happy to stand up as a young 18 to 20-year-old and blast him and say, but I have had the counsel of these people. I've had 10 to 12 people, pastors, missionaries, people, deacons, evangelists. They've all said I should. Mm. So therefore, why should I go with your one person
10 to 1,
over
basically.
These 10?
Yep.
Because they've given me that advice, so therefore I should do what they say.
Yep.
And that's the power that it has in seeking that...
Because there's a particular bias in any group, isn't there, that's already biased towards mission in this case, or ministry.
Yep.
Therefore, of course, they're going to say that.
Exactly.
Probably to 9 out of 10 people.
Exactly.
Unless they were just totally unsuitable or whatever.
Yep.
I get you. Okay.
So that's the power of this seeking advice and counsel from other people that you'd have.
Yep.
And I think it plays a big part. People start to, what would you say? They start to view it and go, if I don't get that advice, I might then, you know, do the wrong thing or fail in this area. Therefore, you know, I have to seek that.
Yeah.
Once I've got that advice, I have to act on it.
Oh, I see.
Because if I don't act on it...
Because you've asked for it.
I'm going contrary to it, and therefore everything's going to go wrong because the Bible says seek that counsel.
Oh, I see. Counsel. So that becomes now a concrete guidance for your life. If you seek the counsel and you get that guidance, now there's this concrete pathway. And if you don't take it, you're now going into sort of
dangerous umbrella.
And it's hailing, you know, boulders in a sense sometimes.
Yep.
Or it's thought of. And I think that's the fear deep down, isn't it? That
and it's what's that, the unknown is bigger. Spoken. That's the thing in that circle. It's not spoken
directly.
And clearly said, you're under the umbrella in this church. When you step out from this church, you're not under the umbrella. You ask anyone, they'll say, no, no, no.
Oh.
That's not the case.
Oh, really?
It's not a spoken thing.
But the culture, the inflection that is put, I can sit here and say to you, I think you're an amazing person. Mm. I'm really blessed by being here with you.
Yep.
And that sounds really nice.
Yeah.
Or I can turn around and go, I think you're an amazing person. I'm really blessed to be here. All of a sudden, that has two different meanings. Same words.
Yeah.
Two different meanings because the inflection.
Yeah, very much so. And you learn to read it. You're brought up in it. You guys are brought up in this thing. You know what the inflections are.
When people are there and they look at you and give you that disapproving look, raise that one eyebrow.
Yeah, those
they've said nothing.
That's what you were saying, something like that, weren't you? It's just those little things that you know that you've done the wrong thing.
Yeah, because they have to cover themselves because they will never put themselves in a position where you can prove them wrong or have anything against them by the
book.
That
was an interesting fact that you brought up the other day. Yeah. What, can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it's sort of like, well, in my case, when I left my church and everything that happened with my family and my siblings and my pastor, they technically didn't do or say anything wrong.
Right.
And so when I left the church, it was sort of like, Hadassah, you have stuffed up the ultimate stuff up that you could possibly do.
Mm.
But nobody understands that the 2 years leading up to that, I was basically shoved out the door.
Mm. You're already being slowly pushed out.
Yeah, I was being slowly pushed out by those, like, the vibes that are radiating out and the looks I would get from my siblings and the little whispers in the corner that I knew were about me, but they never...
So there's no overt, that's what it was more... Yeah, that's right. The intrinsic part of that group is that disapproval is enough.
Yep.
Move. And because we went through a similar thing, that whole steady movement out, like you said, it's quite interesting, it flashed me back almost 25 years to thinking, that's how that works, and it not only works in this particular church, but in a lot of churches, the unsaid is probably more powerful than what
it is
said.
Very much so.
And when you know the culture of these places or these groups, you actually, that's what you operate out of. The underneath story, don't you? Like you said, the top story is one, but underneath is where the action is. Is that right? Like you respond to the underneath story.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And
you were starting to challenge this story here. Now you're thinking, I'm on the roundabout, I'm swinging.
That's where...
Why were you still... can I ask just why you... Because you were now swinging on the roundabout, but you're still considering another year of this. What was happening there for you?
At that point, it was still... I think there was a lot of part that first year at college, it was... I was questioning so many different things.
Mm.
And then I come to a point where I went, they've been around, they've studied it, they know more than me. I just need to accept it.
Oh, did you?
I don't have to understand it.
Right.
I just need to accept it.
Wow, that would have been a bit
of a wrestle. So I come back into college in the second year, and I feel sorry because the lectures were recorded that first year because we had a long-distance student.
Right.
And there was a number of classes in theology where we sat there for 2 hours. and the whole lecture was not about the theology. It was the lecturer and me debating back and forth about this topic,
yeah.
going, but this, Hang but on, what about this, that? And this, and this.
And that's how you learn. And that's what college yeah, is meant
to be
Yeah,
it's how
about.
You learn, but these poor people are getting this video of me debating, trying to understand.
Did and they think you were like a troublemaker asking questions?
No,
like
no, I was invited them quite well.
Oh, good.
And they laughed about it and everything. Yeah. But it was me struggling because I wanted to understand it and believe it because I was convinced.
Of course.
And speaking to a few people that second year, I went back and I went, well, they have studied it. They understand it. They know it. I need to just come with the attitude of I'm here to learn, not to understand everything that gets spoken to me. Right. So therefore, I just need to take it on board.
Oh, sort of, yeah, sit back a little
and
more.
In that time period, I tried to do that. But at the same time, deep down, there was a feeling for me of I'm a sheep walking through the sheep yards knowing I'm going to the chopping block.
Right.
And I've gone from kicking and trying to stop myself from going to a chopping block to all of a sudden going, you know what? I'm just going to submit to that. I'm going to die anyway. I may as well.
Okay.
And it wasn't that I was going to die, but it was the case of I'm going to be pushed out. I'm going to be another mold off this system.
Right.
And I'm going to do what they
say.
So
the real you is going to die in a sense, the true self.
It was in a sense giving up individuality of who I am and what I am to say, well, I'm going to do what everyone else is doing.
Yep,
and become another, not a puppet, but just another carbon copy.
It's another cloning thing. Cloning thing we were talking about the other day, they just want more clones.
More clones. Yes. You believe the same thing, you come out, you preach the same, because the moment you start to change your doctrines, you get pushed out.
And it's a fairly fine line, isn't it, as to what is believed within the context of this is there's tenets, there's theology, there's beliefs around certain scriptures and tenses and past and present and future. There's a whole sort of thing in there that if you sort of push out from that, it doesn't take far to push out. You don't have to push out very far, do you, to be out. So you have to be a clone or else you can't be in.
To be out because you don't know any better. So the thought of being out is terrifying because you just don't know anything else.
Mm.
So it's like enough to keep you there. And it's like, I'm just going to give over to being a clone because the other option is too scary right now.
Yeah. Interesting, because you more or less said the same thing, but within a slightly different context. But you said, I just gave up and said, well, I'll just do what they want. It's easier that way. It's easier to be what they want you to be rather than to try and find, because you guys were both young, you're trying to find yourself at this time as well, as all young people do in life.
Yeah. And I think that's, in that situation, it becomes hard because that, to take that risk and chance to turn your back and step away from it becomes extremely difficult.
Yeah.
It becomes such a huge moment, a huge step, and you're left with nothing and no one to then deal with that situation. So it becomes very difficult. And during that second year, when I then sort of handed myself over to say, make me the clone, I then started to live a double life in the sense of I was allowing that on the surface, but there was so much more under the surface that I was then pulling away at separate times. You know, I was playing football, I was playing cricket, I was working, and there was glimpses at those times when who I was coming through, but I had to make sure that it only happened there. And when I stepped back into that church circle and group, everything was handed back over to being that clone, so to speak.
But you were quite good at that because you said you weren't that growing up.
It come a second nature to be able to change between the two.
Yes.
It was so easy.
Yeah, I understand. You can put on a new suit and walk in and then go out and put your footy clothes on. Two different lives, in a sense, compartmentalised.
And one thing that stood out to me, I was playing a game of footy and I travelled back from the game. And these guys said to me, they made some comment, and I said I went to that church, was in that college.
Mm.
And they made a comment, and they went, oh, I would never have picked you to be there.
Yeah.
And at first I was horrified. I was like, that's how good my testimony is. They didn't even know. And as the talking went on, it wasn't so much that I wasn't a good representation of it. but I was so, inverted commas, normal to them.
Right.
They expected me to be so left field that I wouldn't do, you know, I wouldn't play footy, I wouldn't talk to these guys because I'm better than them.
Right.
And better than they actually had that respect for me because they said, you're just like us. You come out here, you play football, you laugh and talk and joke. Like, I wouldn't get involved in the filth or, you know, the big drink-ups that they had.
Yeah.
But I was still a part of the group. I'd encourage, I'd, you know, let's get these drills happening, boys. You know, I was in with it. And they're like, you're just a normal person. And it sort of, that then sort of shook me up a bit. I was like, this is a bit, you know, I don't really know how to view this. Like, is this a good thing or a bad thing?
Yeah, I could see that.
And a couple of situations ended up happening and I made a few decisions that weren't right decisions. They then influenced my direction and that's where, at the end of that 2 years, that's when I stopped doing Bible college. Mm. And based on those life choices that I had made in those sort of double standards of sort of following and living in that church, but then those other situations where I was trying to get that satisfaction of not being this clone, that then enabled me, or in a sense, I got pushed out. And when you're gripping on and that roundabout is spinning and no one's doing anything, it's very hard to let go. But I got to that point where you see those comics of someone hanging off a cliff and you get the little kid that comes across and stomps on the fingers. What do? You let go because it hurts. That's the position I came into. So
It gets for me, more uncomfortable to stay than it is to go sort of thing. I think you said exactly the same thing the other day.
And it was the case of I didn't have much choice. So that last stage of when I moved back to Albury and I went to the church a few more times, it got to that point where I went, it's just as hard to stay here as it is to leave. Therefore,
yes,
I may as well
it's
leave.
It's easier to go then than when it's like right the other way, isn't it?
Whereas for some people, they're in a situation where that doesn't happen, so they have to physically make that harder choice to leave.
Yes.
And that's huge. People don't realise it's ingrained, it's cultural, it's to every fibre of their being, they're tearing themselves apart to leave that.
Oh, you have to leave everything you know. I was talking to a young girl who was a Mormon and she was telling me that she had been, it was horrible stuff had happened to her within this system and people within it, and she was like, but it's all I know. Like, she was, interestingly, much like you guys, she was the poster child of Mormonism, you know, out singing for the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, out the front of 5,000 people, and look at this beautiful young girl, look at the voice, you know, whatever. And then all of a sudden now she's on the other side. Everything is torn, everything.
Yep.
She knows nothing now. Like you said, out there, there's desert.
Yeah.
Sand dunes are high. Yeah. There's nothing, you can't see initially until you walk to at least the top of that first dune. Oh, there's another civilization over there perhaps I didn't even know existed.
Yep. So that's and I've been stuck on this old bus with no aircon when there's a city there with full water and everything.
Yes, exactly. In this bleak landscape, in a sense, and yet for the one that takes the risk to go, but it's very hard to let go. I think for every human being, this is the same. You know, no matter where you are, whatever you're connected to let go is the scariest thing.
It is terrifying.
Yeah,
terrifying.
Because they kind of deck out the bus that you're in to be like the most amazing, safest, coolest place ever. And this is it, guys. There's nothing else.
That's right. To add to that, though,
the bus is
life. I would say there's nothing wrong with the bus.
Yeah.
The bus drives. The bus has seats.
Yeah, yeah.
The bus has...
Does what buses do.
What it needs to do.
Yeah.
But at the same time, is the bus the only means? It's not.
No.
There's trains, there's planes, there's helicopters, there's walking by foot, there's cars.
That's a very balanced point.
The bus isn't the only point.
Yeah.
But the bus is a reasonable method as well. So it's not the situation of saying the bus is wrong or that the bus is a bad place to be.
Yeah.
But it's about sometimes that bus gets overcrowded or sometimes that bus gets mechanical issues. You know, it's not that the bus is wrong. So I want to stress that because there are people within that circle that I believe 110% living right, doing the right thing. Oh. There is nothing wrong with it.
No, that's right.
There's a few bad eggs in there as well. But at the same time, it's not that this bus is something that everyone needs to you know, stay right away from tomorrow. It's the horrible thing. There's good value in the bus, but at the same time, there's also great value outside of the bus that they're limited to not seeing.
Yeah, and it's like completely fine to stay there if that's what you want. But then for the people that want to leave,
yeah, it shouldn't
they
be
need
such
to be able to get out freely. And I think that's where the issue is. It's not so much if you want to be there, be there.
Yeah.
But we didn't want to be there. And like it's sort of like you're forced to stay there, and they like the fear tactics and everything. So that part is wrong because you can't – they sort of destroy lives with their fear tactics in a sense. So, yes, there's a lot of good there. And stay there if you want to, but then it's sort of if people want to get off the bus, just let them.
Yeah, you know what I mean? in a sense of saying, we're on a bus, there's a bus stop, you want to get off. We don't stop, we just push you out. No, be willing to stop, let everyone stretch their legs and, you know, keep going.
But I think this is inherent in all systems and institutions, if you like, is that changed?
It's going to stop in 5 minutes.
Oh, is it okay?
Yeah.
Must be only an hour maximum. I think all institutions have this built into them that they find it very hard to allow people to get off the bus and then back on the bus.
Yep.
For example, this is how I see it now, is that in a way, and perhaps we might even just finish with this so we can sort of just wrap it up and we might talk a bit more another time about this because I love what you, where you're going.
Yeah.
Is it possible, guys, and this is just a question more than an answer, is it possible that the bus is like a bus that's going to a primary or a secondary school, right? And it's good to be on that bus for a time because you need to go to primary, kindergarten, secondary school, university even. But there comes a time when you need to be able to get off that bus and then put into practice everything you learned in primary, secondary, university, Bible college, whatever. And you need the scope to be able to at least go out and have a look at it. You know, at least go out and have a look. Get off the bus. If you want to get back on the bus, there's none of this. If you go out, you can't come back business, which is what you guys have run across, which is very difficult.
Yeah.
Because now you're going to go out and have a look, but you can't. If you go out and have a look, you can't come back.
Yep.
You know, a lot of groups have this, the what are those guys?
Amish,
that's right. They have their 1 year thing. You can go out for a year, you can have a look around, you can choose to come back now, but if you don't come back then, you can never come back.
Yep.
And there's all this, you know, these sort of rules around this stuff, which is really, depending on what season of your life you're in, you may not be ready to make a decision in exactly 12 months. Yes, I want to commit my life to being an Amish. I'm only going to do this. I'm going to wear these clothes. Like, yeah, what? And it's like, that's a big decision.
Mm.
Yeah. You're only 18 or 17 or something, you know.
Yep. Exactly.
Who knows? Yeah, so, you know, is it possible that this bus, that if we could ride this bus for a bit longer or choose to get off and then wander around here, maybe get back on the bus for a time?
Yeah.
Would that be a better way, do you think, for you guys, if that was the case? Would that have been a more constructive way, do you think?
I think the bus needs to change from an individual bus that's travelling, that you're either on it or you're off it, and it needs to change instead to maybe where they're all walking.
Okay,
the difference with a bus
That's interesting.
Is it's a closed environment.
Ah, right. So you're not open to the outside world so much.
If you're walking in your group, there's someone in the middle.
Yep.
There's someone on the outers, and there's people outside of that as well.
Yep.
There's less of a line.
Ah, yep.
Yeah, and it's in a sense the word inclusive. There's that ability to move and mingle within that circle and still be part of it because there's no fixed edge that you drop off, like that umbrella.
Yeah.
The bus is the umbrella. When you step out of the bus, goose is cooked.
And this is where the fear comes in, isn't it? And there's so much fear around. And I think we'll just finish on this, guys. Thanks heaps for sharing your stories again. And I really appreciate your time. This fear is such a big thing, isn't it? And something that I want to address a lot more through this podcast is trying to see how you can overcome that fear to really get out and experience who you are as individuals, particularly as younger people, but also as older people, because a lot of people have been locked into these things for a long time. They still are unaware that they're playing the game to some degree of what do I look like here? How should I be? Perhaps if we can grow through and, walk together, you know, we can find a better solution and a better ending to the whole thing. So let's keep revisiting this stuff and see how we go with it. So thanks again for your time, guys.
No worries.
Thank you.